Espionage, episode 14. Tara, how is it going?
It's great, Mike.
And that is it.
That's all she has to say.
That's all we got.
I had all these things that I was like debating. I'm tying into just all kind of like got a traffic jam in my brain, but yeah.
And that's all we got. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week. No. You're good.
My brain has too many things that it wants to say right now. I really enjoyed our episode last week.
Yes.
From an interactive perspective.
Yes.
Talking to Justin.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Excited to do our first interview. We've got a lot of ideas for upcoming ones. And if anyone has someone they think would be cool for us to talk to, let us know.
But he was so nice, and I love his voice, and so insightful. Truly... I got a kick out of it.
And like we said, it's been the longest running podcast that we've consistently listened to. Mm-hmm. So just talking to them, you know, just was so much fun for us. You know, I got to do an episode with them for Too Beautiful to Die last year. If you haven't checked that out, I think it was in the, can't remember exactly when it came out, but sometime last year.
Well, I certainly don't.
And then, coming up here in June, going to be doing some guest commentary over it. It'll be on their Patreon, so you'll have to join the Hysteria mm-hmm. Continues Patreon to hear that. But, again, not going to spoil it because they usually announce it after they do their, the previous one. But I'll just say that you might want to go ahead and grab that Patreon and for the commentary. And you don't even need to have the movie to enjoy what we're going to record. And I'll say it is a hard movie to have. It's not necessarily one of the easier ones to pick up, but
that's
all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah,
well,
like, I don't remember date. Like, my brain is not the type of brain that is like, I remember this specific date when something happens in the future. I don't know where I am, like, geographically. I'm not going to remember directions.
Well, I think even in that episode we mentioned seeing Sisters of Mercy a year ago. That was 2 years
ago. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm not, that is not... You know, that's not my wheelhouse.
I'm not great at it either. As the years go on, I'm worse at it.
You are so much better. You remember shit like that all the time. That is exactly how your brain.
No, it's not. It is not.
You know directions.
Yeah, but with time and with how long something is.
So now every time you tell me how long it's been since something happened, I can be like, hey, stay in your lane. This ain't your shit. Like, you don't need to tell me that was 20 years ago.
Everything.
You don't need to tell me how long ago that happened.
Basically, the entire... 00s, whatever mm-hmm.
the
term is for it.
As they say.
To me, it's all 2006. Like, to me, everything mm-hmm. happened in 2006. And so anytime...
Stands to reason.
Anytime there's something accurate. Like, oh, that was from 2010. I'm like, oh, really? Like, in my mind, that was 2006. Or like,
yeah,
so, yeah,
who knows
yeah.
what happened? Like, 2012. I have no fucking clue what happened.
Yeah.
2012, 2013. No idea.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, 2012 is sort of a demarcation because that's like when clay rendering started. So, like, I did not know that. 2012 as being... But then...
When I had hand surgery.
Yeah, and then once you get into the higher 2010s, then it starts being really fuzzy.
I want a nice surgery vacation again. I think it's time. Like, I could get some stuff done, right? A nice surgery. I think that would be lovely.
But yeah, from the end of the after the basically since we moved here, it all sort of piles together where you know, it just sort of.
But the great thing that I don't know where I am in time or space, but I do retain things about like Martian atmosphere, things of that nature. So we got that. I don't know if that makes you enjoy watching Total Recall with me more or enjoy it less, Mike. What do you think? Because then I can be like, actually,
you weren't like that, and
well, I was in my head.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed it. It was great,
and I enjoyed watching Total Recall. Fantastic
and film.
Today. We are going to be discussing. We were talking about Paul Verhoeven and
how cool he is, well, and how fantastic his body of work is.
Well, yes, exactly, and specifically his run of five movies from 1987 to 1997: RoboCop, Total Recall, Basic Instinct, Showgirls, and Starship Troopers. And it just when I put it into perspective of that run. I got really excited. I was like, "Oh, let's cover all five of those movies." So today, we're gonna do The first three, RoboCop, Total Recall, and Basic Instinct. And next week, for part two, Showgirls and Starship Troopers. So excited. Those two movies we have talked about in the past, but it'll just be fun to talk about them in the context of this run.
Like, what a cultural impact from one director. Like, unbelievable.
Yeah, and I see them as, in a way, the last major releases of movies that would have been, you know, Italian exploitation, B-movie, you know, subject-wise, RoboCop.
Yes.
Science fiction, the sleaziness of Showgirls, the over-the-topness of Starship Troopers.
Outlandish, violent, sexual, yeah, in the mainstream film arena.
And that's an important part of it, because I was mentioning this to someone and they were like, well, what about this director? What about this director? I'm like, yeah. I'm not saying that people didn't do stuff, but what I'm saying is these movies, specifically RoboCop and Total Recall, for when those came out, you know, they were ubiquitous. They were major. And and us as 7, 10-year-olds were seeing these movies, renting them, maybe even going to the movies to see them. Movies now that are made with, in the sort of, I'm using the word exploitation, I'm just going to use that word.
Go ahead.
Are still more carved out for people seeking that stuff out. These movies were for everybody.
Yes.
And especially RoboCop, Total Recall, obviously Basic Instinct is more, was more adult themed.
Yeah.
And then as is Showgirls, but these were released in major theaters. These were viewed as giant popular movies.
It's the type of thing, like, as a kid, you would, like, steal moves from it, like, when playing with your friends, you know, like, shooting somebody from, like, with your back turned, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or even, like, pretending you're on the Martian landscape and, like, and, like, your eyes are bulging out. Like, they were things that you frequently thought about because everybody, you know, had seen them. Everybody understood this landscape of these films.
Exactly. And even someone like David Lynch obviously puts out major movies. Mm-hmm. They're big movies. It was still for people seeking that stuff out. RoboCop was ubiquitous. Total 100%. Recall was ubiquitous. Basic Instinct was ubiquitous. And, you know, obviously with Showgirls and Starship Troopers, which we'll talk about next week, it starts to get, it's a little different.
Yeah.
But these three movies in particular were three of the absolute biggest movies of those years. And if you grew up in this time, you could not escape the icon element
status
of them, the pictures, the imagery, the scenes that everyone talked about. These were movies that were everywhere. And so this is part of when we talk about the espionage, we're coming up from the underground spying on these major movies.
And it's the type of thing you would have owned on VHS. You know what
I mean?
Rented it. Owned it on VHS, watched it 1,000 times.
Watched Total Recall
and, you know,
a million times. RoboCop a million times.
In spite of, like, you know, we can talk about Showgirls, like, the lack of it being a hit, everybody knew what it was. You know what I mean? Everybody knew what Starship Troopers was.
Yeah.
Everybody knew Showgirls. They may not have seen it. They may not have gone to the theater to watch it, but everybody knew what it was.
Yeah. And so it's just these movies are incredible, and we just got in the zone. And so we're going to talk about, like I said, RoboCop, Total Recall, and Basic Instinct today. Didn't necessarily take detailed notes. We're just going to talk about these movies in general. But I did watch an incredibly long and great informative RoboCop documentary called RoboDoc from
RoboDoc
a couple of years ago. And it's one of those, I just thought it was like a one and done thing. It's like four, I feel like they're like almost an hour and a half each.
Oh, wow.
Like, it was long. It's very, very detailed. Basically going through the entire movie, talking to pretty much everyone who's in the movie. And it was really good. So excited to relay this info.
Can I just, like, just for a little Terra portion, can I just get the Martian things out first?
Well, I figured, do you want to do that first? I mean, I was going to go in order.
Oh, well, I just thought I would just throw it out there, like, get out. Cause, so we don't even have to, like, say it in relation to the film. I can just get it out of my brain. Like, for example, terbinium is not a real element. I mean, nobody needs to know that. But and just so everyone knows, too, like, you know, Mars isn't hot. It's not a hot planet. It's very cold. cold planet. It's red, so you'd think it'd be hot, but that's like rust and iron ores in the crust. So you're talking about a cold place. You're also not talking about, like, you know, in the amazing scene where their eyes are bursting out of their heads and their, you know, things crack and you're like, oh my God, there must be immense pressure there. It's not immense pressure. It's like a 1%. You can roll your eyes over there, but just, no one can see it. It's not like it. You could like jump, like you don't weigh much. You're very cold. You know what I mean? You're looking at me like, I just people may be interested in Mars. That's why I don't want to talk about it in relation to the film. I just want to say it just in case people watch it and they're like, is that really what Mars is like? It's not. It's not really what Mars is like. It's cold. It is red. There's very little atmosphere. It's full of carbon dioxide. The pressure is not immense. It's very, very little. You wouldn't roll down a hill heavily. You'd kind of like, bump, 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 bump. I wouldn't really hurt you or make you crack your very strong mask that you use when there's no atmosphere on your face. Just saying. That's all. I'm done now.
You good? You feel better now that you got that out?
I just thought maybe people were curious about Mars. We discussed this when they found what was it, contamination, when they found the eggs in the ice in the cave on Mars.
Yes.
It'd be an ice cave, and I think it was supposed to be like warm. But yes. No, it's we've discussed the Martian atmosphere before. The thought of mine need to be revisited. We're doing underground espionage. I really have been into the atmosphere on planets again, revisiting them, as Mike knows no one else needs to know. Maybe this is the plan. We can just start with a different planet or planetoid every day and just have a little,
is that
little
right?
Atmospheric fact.
I like it.
That's interesting.
I'm hyperbolically rolling my eyes and just I'm playing the heel, Tara. I'm playing the heel.
Comes
to
natural.
Your
Are you playing a heel if it's like how you genuinely feel though? You just are a heel.
Is that right?
Yeah. Planetary atmospheres make you heelish.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's cool. That's all right. I like it. But let's move forward and go in chronological order.
Oh, we're back.
As you had planned. Thank you for taking this little roadside attraction with me. Could it be like Tara's roadside attraction?
No, I do.
Big Red's roadside attraction.
Yeah. Code Red.
Code Red.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, I do like when you get into the nitty-gritty and stuff like that. But, I mean, perfectly honest, it's not – I don't
– find it interesting in any way?
It's not that I don't find it interesting in any way. It's just that when watching movies like this, I don't like doing the, like, well, that couldn't happen. Like, that could – I just don't like
that. Yeah, I don't want it to take you out. That's why I didn't want to do it while we were talking about the film.
Yeah,
that's
just set it up so it's in
differently.
So it's in my head.
Why would it be in your head? You don't care. Like, you're never going to think about it again. I'm going to ask you in a week what the atmosphere on Mars is like.
I'm going to say it's like
how many
recall.
Millibars of pressure are on it?
It's there, exactly.
There's one.
Like Total Recall.
Okay.
Well.
Exactly. That's exactly. See what it is. So it's just, you know, it's a little.
But I think that's the important thing with movies like this. I really do. I do find that enjoying these movies, you just have to get. I can't have that in my head because once
you
start the like rolling it down, it's like, well, yeah, no, this is a movie. Of course, none of this could happen. Like, it's not, you know,
there's space colonies on Mars. I mean, you know, we're going to discuss it. Like, I'm not trying to say it could. I just am interested in space and planets. Just want to talk about it. Okay, and this is a great way to shoehorn it in. And apparently it's not the appropriate time or place. I thought maybe this would be the closest thing to an appropriate time or place.
You do have
discuss.
Me as a you and have
I know you're captive
attention.
And I can't like there's no other time while I will ever get your attention to discuss these
That
things.
Is not true. You know what? I that is not true at all.
I've been reading about the Kuiper Belt. Like I really like to think, okay, here's what I get excited about. When I'm thinking about, because like, yes, there's this boring stuff like who fucking cares what it's like on Jupiter because we're not on Jupiter. We're not going to Jupiter in our lifetime. We won't be on Jupiter. It doesn't matter, right? It's not going to interact with us in any way. It doesn't touch us. But I like to really zoom out. I like big pictures, right? So to really zoom out and think about the way that everything, you know, the the largeness of the universe, you know, thinking about our solar system in relation to the rest of the universe and zooming out and thinking about how vast it is and thinking about how, like, an ant won't understand Total Recall in any way, even if it was in front of a movie screen, because it's just too much to understand. It won't,
right.
The ant won't get the language. The ant won't get understand the scenes. Like, there's so many things that just aren't even possible to relate to. And so that's what I like to think about, the vastness of the universe and how there's something else out there where that scale makes sense. And it makes me just think about the unlimitless possibilities of life, right? Not even life, just existence, and really, like, appreciate all the shit that I don't understand.
No, I love it. And
that's what sci-fi is based in. And that's, you know, like, inspiration, creativity, and just, like, understanding the vast unknown, I think, is exciting for me. So to think about this extreme cold red planet, you know, I mean, it's exciting and it's inspiring, and it inspired you know, Philip K. Dick.
No, totally. I love when you talk about this stuff, Tara. And you know what? You know when I like it the most is when you and I are out together at a place. That's
a good time. Like, if we're like at,
sometimes we're at home, you just, it's got the home distractions, and I'm just like too distracted.
Yeah, we go to Cantina, and then I can really,
yes,
can really. Oh,
but I love that.
I'll prepare a report.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can tell you,
it is tough. We've talked about this before, where I do think some of the best ideas and conversations come outside of the home, even if it's just you and I, mm-hmm. the same two people. At home, there's just so many home distractions.
Yeah.
And that's, like, why I like putting my phone away.
Yeah, you should turn your phone face down
now. Not because I have information on it.
Well, I mean, you could turn it face down get notifications.
Well, it doesn't matter.
That's the thing. Like, I always put my phone face down so I can't see. And it is, but it is funny when people will flip my phone over and be like, oh, here, like, it makes them uncomfortable that my phone's upside down, but I just don't want to see it, because I know if I see, like, I get a text or something, that I'm going to get distracted by it. And I
flip mine upside down. I try to put it in the other room as much as possible.
I don't go that far.
I mean, when we're away, I like to just try to keep it totally away, mm-hmm. as much as possible, just because when you're in the moment, you can have the ideas come from being in the moment.
Exactly.
And I mean, even I just think anytime we have the good idea for a release, or even the way we talked about how this podcast was, mm-hmm. going to be, it was you and I sitting at the cantina having a conversation about what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do this series. And it's just, to me, that's what I like about going out, is, mm-hmm. having the conversation.
And I think that's also why, you know, people talk about these ideas that come to them in the shower. Like, what is it about a shower? And it's like, the shower, you're not distracted by the television or your phone or something else. You know what I mean? Like, the shower is the time where your brain is like, you finally get, like, brain downtime. You know what I mean? Which we don't get so much
anymore. Well, and that's why I always say what I loved about mowing the lawn.
Yeah.
It was that.
Yeah.
I was totally focused. And so my brain was able to, you know, that's where I come up with titles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The shower, 100%. You know, we'll be recording, you know, working on a release or something like that, and stuck on an idea, stuck on something. Yeah. Might straight up just jump in the shower and be, mm-hmm. like, let me just, like, think a little bit, and then take a shower on it, mm-hmm. you know, and then a lot of times you pop out and oh, hey, here's the idea.
And
you know?
And then I'll not want to take a shower, because I'm like, oh, I want to listen to this podcast, or I want to listen to music, and I don't want to, we can't blast it in our shower, because you can hear everything in the neighbor's, it's the only place in our apartment where you can, like, hear everything in the neighbor's place, because we share a medicine cabinet. So I'll, like, not want to take a shower. Another reason I hate showers, like, I just don't like showers. Anyway, because I want to keep listening to stuff, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to sit there in silence. But that's when I know that I need to do that, because I can't handle the silence. Like, I don't ever want to get to the point where I just can't handle not having my phone, not having music playing, not having anything. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be able to raw dog reality.
Yeah, and I mean, and it just, it helps when you separate these things, especially when you are working on something, which we have a new release coming out.
They should be working on a lot more.
Sending off.
So frustrating.
And, but you mean, you have tons of stuff you have in the, irons in the fire.
I do, but I feel like I've been a lazy bones.
Not oh you dude.
Right?
I am shutting that down right now. I'm
hey, look, you know how it goes. You have momentum.
See, you had this moment. You went
no,
to
we're
that
just
place.
Having a conversation. I'm not trying to be self-depreciating, but it is that thing when you have momentum and you're doing things, but it's like when you're busy, you see the little pieces of time where you could be more busy. You know what I mean? You start to see the pieces and you're like, "Oh, I could fit this in. I could fit this in. I could do this." And then you just kind of get, "Hey, let's go. Let's talk about a film, Mike. Come
I
on,
was,
let's
I,
not.
I,
let's put those judgy eyebrows
I,
down."
No one, no one. Tara, first of all, I've always said you are one of the two hardest working people I know. You're a constant inspiration to me. You are doing so much right now. And so I just don't ever want you to think that you aren't doing enough. Tara.
Thank you. I wish today I was redoing the floors because I'm going to tile the bathroom floor and I'm really excited about that. But the damn tiles are stuck in customs. Drama.
We will make it happen. Well, Tara, I don't know how we ended up all the way over here, but let's go back to 1987.
Big Red's Roadside Attractions.
And let's talk about RoboCop. Tara, do you love RoboCop?
It's so funny that you ask that, Mike, because I was just about to say, oh, I just love RoboCop. Like,
yeah.
This film, it is so, like, I can't imagine not knowing what RoboCop is and then seeing RoboCop for the first time and just being, like, so surprised by it. Like, it's remarkably violent. And, like, Verhoeven is
very, very violent.
Brand of violence, I think it stretches. I mean, except in Showgirls, but I mean, that's a pretty grisly rape scene. But stretching throughout his film, he has such like gloopy violence.
Yes.
But it's not, there's that type of like mega current, like mega violence that doesn't hit the same as this. Like, for some reason.
Oh, totally.
This violence is like gloopy, bloody. Like, the way the bodies jerk, the way that they use the squibs, like, just the way the violence is portrayed, I think, is the most, like, real feeling of the hyper-violent films. You know what I mean? It's like, some point, like, all the modern horror stuff, it just seems like CGI and stupid. Like, I just kind of roll my eyes at it. It just seems gratuitous in a different way.
And it's just sort of not, it's not effective anymore. But even when you go back and watch something like RoboCop, it's still very effective. And Verhoeven definitely wanted it to be ultra violent. He kept saying he wanted more blood. In fact, the scene where the executive guy, the first guy that gets killed by the robot,
yes.
They actually reshot it later because he didn't think it was violent enough.
Oh my god,
so
that scene is insane.
Yeah, so
just the like absolutely destroying bodies.
Well, then,
like, he's so good with people being blasted into hamburger meat by machine guns, like in Total Recall.
Yeah.
When Quaid is using like the body as a body shield and that guy's just getting destroyed. Like, you don't see that. And it's just, and it is that thing where the action movie, right? Like, especially when we were growing up, like, it was like, this is a romantic movie. This is an action movie.
Yeah.
And it just like, RoboCop as an action movie and Total Recall as an action movie almost seems absurd because they're so like, there's a robot, you know what I mean?
Well, RoboCop especially, I think, has more of, especially when you go back and watch it, you know, more as an adult, there's just so many great themes that run through it. And he even said he wanted it to be sort of his search for lost paradise. Verhoeven said that's what he wanted it to be. And in a way, that is really what the movie is, you know.
Yeah.
Murphy, of course, played by Peter Weller, you know, the scene where he gets mowed down and completely destroyed. You know, there was obviously a ton of cuts had to be made to make it R.
Yeah.
I do think the version we watched was unedited because when I watched the documentary, I was like, no, that was in the version we watched. We rented it on Prime, so I'm pretty sure it's uncut. Whatever we did, I'm pretty sure it's uncut. But either way, the story of, you know, the guy being mowed down, killed, brought back as a robot, but his entire, you know, his memory supposedly being wiped, but as he starts gaining it back and thinking about these things, it's
having an identity.
The human and the robot start, you know, it starts mixing together. But, you know, I love that it takes place in future Detroit, which I can't, I don't remember if they say the year in the movie, but I do think it was only supposed to be like in the 90s.
Yeah.
What you know.
Yeah, always.
The movie was, the idea for the movie was started in about 1980, and the one of the writers was working for I think it's Warner Brothers, and was on the set for Blade Runner, and that's where he came up with the idea for RoboCop, and that he had that name, and it was never supposed to be the name. It was always going to be changed.
He just kind of was like, "We'll just call it RoboCop working title."
Yeah, and then it just ended up being which is like the best name.
Yeah, it's iconic.
But it's also too, that's what gives it does have that name of like an Italian post-apocalyptic. You like Robo War, right?
Yeah. Like, this seems like it would be just like a underground Italian post-apocalyptic low budget thing, but the magic is that it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it's so well made. The story is incredible. Well crafted. But, you know, I was just thinking about the violence even more, like, I'm struggling with the word gratuitous, because it's like, it's not just thrown in there to make a point, but it's like it serves a purpose.
Well, no, it serves a purpose, yeah.
To show the level of villainy, you know, 100%. To show the violence, to highlight the violence. And it is almost like shocking you into like understanding the lack of respect for humanity that these people have. But it also is appreciative of that violence. You know, it's like, it's somebody who has this like, almost like a respect for human life and the experience to say, like, when somebody's just reduced to like a hunk of meat and life is so expendable, that's the ultimate evil. When people can be used in this great cog and machine, and they are no longer thought of as individuals.
Absolutely. And the violence that Murphy has to go through, when you see that, you are more attached to him as a robot, and then as when the memories start coming back to him, and especially when he goes back to the home, that whole scene is, and that was Verhoeven's idea, was like, that was the going to the lost paradise, that the place that he sort of remembers, and it's coming back to him. And there's a point where he says, you know, he's asking his partner, you know, or she's at, I can't remember what it is, they're having the conversation about the memories, and he's like, you know, I know I had this wife and kids, I can feel them, but I can't remember them. Right? So it's like, it's this thing that's like there, but it can't fully articulate it or fully remember.
Isn't that how memory works too?
Yeah. And I thought about that. Yeah. And I was thinking about how that is so, like,
it's like you don't get the details, but you can just remember the way you felt. You remember your feelings. You remember a mood, and you can't quite. That's why we're such unreliable narrators.
Exactly,
about our
which
own
is what
experiences.
We're just talking about. You know, like, oh yeah, that was happening in 2006.
Yeah,
no,
I don't
that
know.
Happened in 2010.
Don't ever ask me when something happened. I don't know.
But I was really like struck by that moment when, and that idea. I'm like, no, I absolutely get that idea. And so that's the thing is about RoboCop. Why it's so great is that these themes are what go through the whole movie, and then you get, you know, just the great. Just over the top, insane action. Kurtwood Smith playing the perfect villain is Boddicker,
so
Charles Boddicker,
good.
So good as the head of the gang. You got Ray Wise in there, who's just so great as well. And
the cast is fantastic.
Yeah, everyone. It is, and they really. It was a long casting process, and you know, Rich Schwarzenegger was thought about for RoboCop, but they were like, well, when you bulk it up, he's going to be big.
Huge,
so Peter Weller's
so
thin that it works in that way. And he really took it seriously to the point where he definitely like annoyed people on the set. Like people were like, he was like one of those guys who's like, you know, you got to call
he's
me
like,
Robo.
Talking, oh my God.
Yeah. And he's like, people were like, ow, you know, like, so, but they all were very honest in this documentary. It's great. They did say Peter Weller banged every chick. Like all the assistants and makeup.
Oh,
chicks.
Not Nancy Allen.
Did not bang Nancy Allen.
Lewis,
well,
that was her name.
Say,
I had to look it up. I had to look it up.
Didn't say he banged Nancy Allen, but mostly like the like people who worked on it.
Oh my
people
God.
People were saying
that's
that
fantastic.
About him, and then they cut to him, and he's like, you know, hey, I was single, had a good time. You know, like, you didn't deny it. They said, like, always in the trailer, you could just hear him banging, which I love. You know? I love that.
Hey, you know what? He couldn't eat food. He's a skinny guy.
And he said he would lose water weight every day because takes place in Detroit, it was filmed mostly in Dallas during the summer. So they said it was like over 100.
That would be so brutal. Yeah. It actually looks hot in the...
They said it was like really horrible conditions like filming. And like everyone is basically miserable. Like, and Verhoeven is totally insane totally driven. But one of those things where like he could also just piss you off in 1 second. But then he would piss people off to get the results. Like, he would, you know, he's from Holland, so he has the accent. Like, oh, you fuck. I can't do a Dutch accent, but.
I was hoping you would try. I was like, accent, oh, good.
You know, just would be like, joy. I want to do this in this scene, but you guys couldn't do it because you're like, you're no good. Yeah. Like, you're just going to fuck me. And then they would do it even. This explosion's not going to be big enough. Just you guys. So, like, there is this give and take. So, like, there's a lot of tension. A lot of people loved each other. A lot of people hated each other. But. Ultimately, the vision, people were so excited about the vision of what this movie could be.
I mean, that is, you know, so you mentioning that, that's a world I do miss. Like, although, like, it could be annoying, but I miss the, like, for it to be okay to yell at somebody or to say something unkind, like, with words. You know what I mean? Like, especially, like, in a professional setting, like, pissing somebody off is like literally a crime now. It's insane. People could be fired, prosecuted, whatever. Yeah. It's just like, you know, when people would say like sticks and stones may break my
ball. Now it's all that
is fucking, they're like, that was dead wrong. That's you know what violence is? Words are violence. Words. Like literally there's like a mural in Los Angeles that says words are violence. Yeah. Like it's insane.
It's completely
insane. So just to think about like how would he even do his job if he could scream like the performances like it's wild.
There's no way the way this movie was made could be made, even down to all the practical effects, people getting hurt like constantly, like the squibs and like
I bet. I mean, they can't feel great. Oh yeah, didn't he have to like demonstrate one because nobody believed him that it wouldn't hurt?
Yeah, but I mean, people said it does like kind of hurt. Like you get bruised.
It's an explosion. It's next to your skin. Oh yeah, and the one that Sharon Stone didn't want to do on her forehead in Total Recall, I think.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. Oh my god. Yeah. But so. You know, this also just all the great way this is set up, you know, will predict kind of some of the way Starship Troopers is set up with the news. And of course, Lisa Gibbons looking so good. Still looks great.
Oh, Lisa Gibbons. Still looks great. I was so thrilled to see her.
But I love the way they're doing doing the news where it is basically like how it is done. It does predict a lot.
It predicts so much. Like all RoboCop and Total Recall.
Yeah.
RoboCop and Total Recall really got the dystopian gray of the future. Like, how everything in Total Recall, every room is like giant flat screens in the wall and gray. Like everything is kind of like modular.
And even like in RoboCop,
gray, no pops of color. Like nothing's like soft. It's just kind of like, oh, it's just gray walls, flat screens, gray furniture.
But I love the news, you know, how that keeps intercutting throughout the commercials that keep intercutting, like Nukem, the game.
Yes! Like, oh my god, I love it.
Yeah, that stuff's really great. And then even just the way that it's, you know, the double crossing with the corporation who's building the Ed, you know, robot, but then the one guy, Miguel Ferrer. R.I.P. Also, he's obviously cool Ray too. Wise and him also two Twin Peaks alums, which is always great. But, you know, he's great in it. And, you know, he's the one who has the design for RoboCop. And even just the way that they introduce RoboCop, like you see it through the screen and you see it through his screen and you see the people talking to him. But you're seeing it from the POV of RoboCop. And the very first time you actually even see RoboCop is when he's up walking and it's in a screen off to the side. You'd actually.
Yeah.
Seeing it, it takes such a long, cool time in this great way, especially like, you know what he looks like. Because even if you went to see it opening weekend, it's on the poster. So it's not like, but it's still that great. The reveal's so great, you know?
The thought of just, like, every kid having seen this when really, like, I'm reflecting upon, like, the cocaine, the violence, the women, the professional women.
Well, which they said that was people
blasting. Like,
felt that was Paul Verhoeven's favorite scene to film was the coke and hookers scene, which
sounded great.
Looked like a lot of fun. And one of the girls said that Miguel Ferrer said to her before they filmed, goes, "I just want to apologize if I get aroused." But he goes, "I also want to apologize if I don't get aroused." it's like don't be offended either way.
I love it. It's just like when we're talking about Jess Franco films, we're like, how is this guy not have an erection? Yeah. Like, I don't understand how he does not have an erection.
I'd be bricked up. You know what I mean?
Well, that's your every moment. It's your kind of status quo baseline for you. Like, it's going to take a lot for that to not happen.
But that scene is so great when, you know, then Kurtwood or Boddicker comes in. Mm-hmm. And just, again, the violence of blowing him away, it all leads up to, you know, the finale, which the level of violence needs to be where it's at in order for you to be invested not in RoboCop himself and then in how he ends up taking these guys out.
Well,
right?
And truly, like, I keep conflating the two in my head because watching RoboCop and Total Recall in quick succession, I mean, even Days Apart, but they really do, like, have a distinct pacing where you feel like you're on a ride, right?
Totally.
You feel like it's that very, like, scene to scene, like somebody's running through each scene. Everything zips by the way that the action sequences are filmed. Like, I do think that they play as extremely modern in terms of the quick cuts because, you know, even at that time, like, films would have, like, really slow parts where they're just like think about E.T. like that movie's a slog fest, you know, it's just like, oh Jesus, but like these just zip by very much
totally.
Like the like I'm trying to think of a better word than like RoboCop, ADD pacing
I don't think it's
quick cuts
think it's ADD at all. I do think it just zips because of this. You're invested in the story, you're invested in
everything in there is exciting. It's put together in a way that really engages your attention.
And like I said, the way I approach these types of movies is you just have to go with, you know, again, I don't like the, like, once you start breaking down, like, well, if he could do this, why didn't he do that? You just have to, like, go with what the film is presenting you. And once you just get into that rhythm, you're just in it, you know?
And I think, too, I think what Verhoeven is presenting in his films and maybe the reason that they feel very, I wish I had a better word other than iconic because it's used so much, but truly I mean it in terms of like our generation, it's that he's presenting a culture in addition. Like he's not, you're not just following, it's not like some day one director who's just following like a robotic cop.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like he's a RoboCop.
No, he's putting all this
context. Yes. You get the commercials, you get tastes of the society, you get to see people's homes, their living rooms. Same thing with Total Recall.
Yep.
Like you're seeing what a man and wife lived like. You get to see the food they eat. You watch them preparing a meal, which is like so exciting. So you're just watching all aspects of culture, even, you know, down to showgirls, like the food they eat, their bedrooms, like all of those things, like providing that broader context of what it is just makes it so much more engaging.
It creating the world.
Yeah,
right?
He absolutely creates the world where and you just get invested. Like this is, you know, it's really easy to be invested in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love when eventually they go to the coke factory.
Oh my god!
I guess
the cocaine
and
factory.
There's that entire scene where it just becomes this just total all out just gun war, just blowing.
You gotta
everyone
shoot
away.
Out at the cocaine factory. Oh, it's
so
fantastic!
Great.
So much blood.
That's where most people don't make it through that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I do. I love when they get those giant guns.
Oh yeah, and the criminals are so excited about their
they just
their
keep blowing
giant
a bunch
military grade
like,
guns, and they're like, "What, blow up a car?"
Yeah.
And then like the looting scene,
the glee of
again,
it's the glee of the destruction and violence, and then mixed with, the humanity of RoboCop,
and like the only thing that I found upsetting in RoboCop was Nancy Allen's haircut. And I get that it's
she
it's
wasn't
a
happy
time
with it
place.
Either.
Oh, really?
They,
thank God.
She had long hair. And she, by the way, she's great. Dressed to Kill,
she's,
Carrie.
She's fantastic.
She ends up being in all the RoboCop movies. Yeah. She loves, you know, she has only great things to say about Peter Weller, Verhoeven, everything.
Yeah.
But she had long hair originally, and they wanted her to be just, you know, more, you know, tough,
pragmatic,
whatever.
Tough cop.
And then they said she kept like going to get her hair cut, and then they're like shorter. And so she didn't love it. Then she looks back at it, and I'm like, oh, it's fine, whatever,
yeah, it's
just
fine.
Of the time. But it was not her. That was not her decision. Or
I never thought it was. But yeah. God, I mean, she has great hair, and to like do that to it, it's so rough.
She is so great in Dressed to Kill. You know, she's great in a lot of things.
But there were these points in time where everybody was just like, it's so brave to have short hair.
Yeah,
you know? I just like it was that moment in time in the 80s. Where, like, everybody was just showing their feminine independence by, like, having a terrible haircut.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. Which, and again, people are like, short hair is easier. It's like, not like that it is. Like, it's not easier that way. Like, do you know how much shit you have to do to hair like that? And, like, you have to have it cut all the time. And especially when there's, like, shaved elements and you gotta spray it and blow dry it and do it. It's not easy.
No.
It's not easier. It's just different. It's just uglier.
I love all the stop motion.
Oh.
And the practical effects. I mean, obviously, this is all practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
And even the way they did the Robo Vision from your POV, when you're looking up basically through RoboCop's eyes, it was all like done, hand done, like where it looks all like a digital camera, like and they have like
the even
targets.
Think about that.
It was all like literally hand drawn, and then
superimposed.
Yeah,
well, it looks good.
All the stop motion looks great. All of it looks great, and it, you know, when you just knowing the dedication, how long it takes to do these things, the physicality of it only makes it that much better. And just knowing like they had these limitations, then you have to work around these limitations. Oh, even down to so the cars themselves are like Ford Tauruses, and just sort of beat up.
Yeah, with the flat paint.
And originally, Verhoeven's idea was to have these like futuristic cars, and he designed a car and everything. And then when RoboCop went to go get in it, it was like too small, and it wouldn't work for RoboCop to be in these cars he designed. So then they were like, well, actually, this is some sort of dystopian future. Not everything should be nice. And even the way the police station looks kind of run down and the cars look kind of run down. And that totally makes it like you don't even think about it, but then when I say that, when they talk about the documentary, like, oh yeah, that is I it registered when I was watching it, like oh, this rundown police cars, but like
where only the fat cats get fat and then everybody else has like kind of trash.
Yeah, man.
And then
but my point in saying that is that, and what Verhoeven said is like, what's great about having limitations is a lot of times you come up with a solution that ends up being better than if you had unlimited money. And again,
you're not overcomplicating.
The budget
it.
For this was like $10 million, which sounds like a lot. It's not, you know, in any way a lot
for
movie
that.
Like this.
Yeah.
Total Recall was something like $60 million, right? And they did go over budget, and they were worried they were going to pull the plug on the movie because they went a couple mil over budget.
Yeah.
But the studio fought for it, and ultimately it became like the highest grossing movie of the year.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and they called, then another thing that RoboCop like predicted again is the resurgence of the matte black paint job
in
that, because like the satin that everybody has, like those satin wraps. Ooh.
Well, even on RoboCop's helmet you noted that, and that's really what it was.
Yeah.
And they said they basically had to repaint and touch it up every single day because it would just get, you know,
beaten up. No, and that's that was like his jaw piece was clearly not cast, you know, in the same way that the rest of his attire was cast. So, yeah, you could definitely see the satin paint job
It's
great.
It's so, but it gives it that human quality to it. And even the way they originally did the RoboCop, you know, design was he basically couldn't move. He worked with a movement coach for like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first day they got in it,
he was like, nope.
So they had to totally, like, figure out how to make it work, and they did.
Yeah.
But it took a long, long time.
Yeah. It seems
complicated. And even to design the actual, you know, costume itself, and it ended up being inspired by that Japanese artist who did the sexy robots. The name just fell out of my head, and actually I met him a few years ago. If you look it up right now, if you just literally look up sexy robots, that's actually
I'm gonna Google sexy robots.
That's finally where they came up with the design, because they had so many different sketches, and it was a combination of that and then the robot from Metropolis is how the final design of RoboCop came out. Do you have it there?
Soriyama,
exactly. Yep. Thank you very much. And so, yeah, it was those. Ooh. Yep.
They look great. These are very sexy robots.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, RoboCop really better than ever, holds up better than ever, has this great emotional impact that continues, and is just one of those bam, 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 perfect movies. You know, kind of like, I don't think I ever saw RoboCop 3. I remember liking 2. It's been so long. I don't know if I ever saw 3.
I don't know if I ever saw 3. I do remember liking 2, but God, it's been a long time.
Yeah. Do you have anything else, Tara, to say about RoboCop before we move on?
No, I'm good.
Probably think of something and
we'll just do a little, we'll do it. I don't mind jumping all around. I'm kind of like I'm not just an old Conker driving down the road. I'm like a futuristic car popping around. Boop, 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 boop. Teleporting everywhere.
You're like in a Johnny cab.
Those Johnny cabs are, the Johnny cabs were kind of like the least futuristic thing, but they did predict Waymo.
This is true. Well, we move a few years later to Paul Verhoeven's next movie, Total Recall. And, after RoboCop and the insane making of that and how much went into it, he didn't necessarily want to make another sci-fi movie, but Schwarzenegger wanted him. And Schwarzenegger
he
wanted Verhoeven.
Yes.
And so that's why this ended up happening. Total Recall had been in development hell for over a decade. I think the rights were bought. It's based on a Philip K. Dick short story. We will... God damn it.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Everybody can make it.
I haven't pulled up. Hey, this is a podcast. So listen to us for that hard information.
I have Marsupedia pulled up. Do you want me to read from that?
They have it for this, for our incredibly detailed...
their edification.
We can remember it for you wholesale. It was from 1966. And the rights were bought in 1974.
Jesus.
So that's how long. And it had been in development hell. Multiple people tried to develop it. Multiple actors were attached to the movie until finally Schwarzenegger signed on. And then basically he was so big at that time, was able to kind of have his say. And,
amazing.
Verhoeven's who he wanted and Verhoeven's who he got. And, man. Wow, rewatching this last night. So we did it sort of out of order. We did Basic Instinct, RoboCop, and Total Recall as watching it.
Yeah.
Last night was when we watched Total Recall.
Do you know what's insane, though? Like, especially in Total Recall, Sharon Stone is so pretty.
Oh, yeah,
like,
she
is
so hot.
Like, her face is so pretty.
Yeah.
Like watching her again, I was just like, my God. Like, I just found her, like, entrancing.
Totally.
Especially in Total Recall, especially... The tube top, I remember as a kid, I wanted that outfit so much too.
The hot pink tube top,
the stirrup exercise gear, the cool scrunch socks that kind of fall down into her exercise shoes. Oh my God, it's the best. Like that is just like peak, mwah, love it so much.
And what's great about Total Recall, much like RoboCop, is, when you have someone like Verhoeven at the helm, he wants it to be about something else. He's using the formula of the science fiction or the action movie and talking about something else. I mean, if this movie was, and I do think there was a remake of it, which I've never seen. If this movie was made now, it would be so focused on the colony people who are rebelling against
the colonial revolt.
It would be such a slog
and
so boring.
Yeah.
And instead, this movie's more about memory and dual personalities and
sleazy underworld.
Yeah. It is just like a basically 2-hour chase. And so there's that element of fun, but then you're also, while you have that element of fun, you do start thinking about what memory is and implanting these memories and what
how would you know what happened and what didn't happen.
So much more interesting than the rebel. It's just like, oh
and
my God, you would just zone
out. What Quato says, and Quado's advice in terms of like trying to figure out who you were and letting your past define you instead of letting your current actions and how you are now define you, you know, and within yourself. And so like yeah. having like that other message, you know, of just being like, it's never too late to be what you want to be.
Yeah. Or to change ideas or to, you know, change your approach. Exactly.
Grow, mature. Cause yeah. Who wants to be held down to, like, thank goodness we are not who we were, you know, 25 years
ago.
Yeah,
but that element is always still there. So, Total Recall, you know, watching as a kid, you know, it's one of those watching it now. It's I remember watching as a kid, loving it, owning the VHS.
I'm watching it constantly.
But also sort of, like, not totally understanding.
Yes.
Like, and then watching it now, I'm like, oh, yeah, no. I was definitely, like, it was not as, like, unclear as I remember as a kid.
Yeah, well, I
you know what I mean?
I do remember when I saw Basic Instinct. There's a few things I watched young that I just didn't get. You know what I mean? I did not understand what I was watching. I was bored by them. And Basic Instinct and The Hunt for Red October.
You were bored by Basic Instinct? When I was like younger? What?
I didn't understand it. I didn't know it. Like, it was just like a, yeah. I was just like,
I loved it because I mean, you know, I was just.
And
like,
then the muff shot, I was always like, "What is the big deal about that?" Like that scene, I didn't even get it. When people referenced it, I was like, "What are they? What are they looking at?" Like, I just wasn't. I was too young to like try to look up somebody's skirt. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know what you mean, Tara.
I know you were just,
but
see, that's your baseline always, even as a child.
But again, actually. What you said, though, made me think of something that I wanted to say that I think is important, especially with these movies, is that it is important to see things too young. It is important to see things that you don't understand.
Yes.
It is important to go above your level and to then catch up later. I do think it's important. All these movies have that, especially something like RoboCop, especially Total Recall. Seeing this movie when I was 10, like, I didn't fully comprehend, like, so wait, is he... So. We're sort of assuming people have seen. Oh no, is he a agent or is this memory?
Total Recall. I thought you.
Is this memory his real memory or is it?
No. Yeah. Exactly. Like, is this the implanted memory from Recall or is it actually? Is he Hauser and Quaid, and the Recall just reactivated him? You know, like who can tell? And it's just like the. But that's some Philip K. Dick shit, right? Where it blurs things and it doesn't really give you a great answer. But that's also Verhoeven shit because we get that in Basic Instinct where you never understand who killed who.
Yeah.
Because it's never quite clear. It's never spelled out exactly which person committed which crime at what time. You know what I mean? So I enjoy the kind of... It's more like reality and you kind of you suspect what the case is. You think that something happened, but you're never quite sure. You don't get definitive proof.
Yeah, exactly. And with Total Recall, Schwarzenegger plays the character who's got a job in a construction job. But he dreams about Mars and he really wants to go to Mars. And there's a company that offers a augmented memory. Mm-hmm. Well, they'll implant this memory like you went to Mars for 2 weeks or anywhere. Yeah. You went to Jupiter for 2 weeks, and they give you all these detailed memories. And
they can even give you photos.
And they can choose if you want to be
souvenirs.
As a spy or as an athlete, et cetera. And so Schwarzenegger chooses he wants to do it as a spy. And then that's where everything starts going haywire. And you learn throughout the movie that he was actually on Mars as an agent. His mind was erased. He was put here back on Earth. He goes back to Mars, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think even discussing this detailed plot is important because
I assume people have seen Total Recall. If they haven't, they should.
I'm giving a baseline context. And so when eventually lands back on Mars, you know, the things keep unfolding and you're still not 100% sure. You never, and again, like you said, it's never totally clear.
Yeah. And it's so cool. Like, and you have mutants and you have a simulated atmosphere that's controlled by an evil corporation. And will they give people oxygen? What are they charging them for? Oxygen for every single thing. Just their existence, they get charged, you know, credits for. It's so great.
But Tara, I was going to say, you know, watching it this time, the movie did feel that it was very, it spoke to us directly, because ultimately the things that everyone on Mars wants and the mutants want is just moving some cool air. Moving air. And you know what?
Moving air.
That's what we want.
Why? Like living and just in a place where there's no just like unmoving air. Just
people
like,
who are just like, I'm going to go to sleep in this bedroom with no sound or moving air.
Fan. I don't know any moving air. Like
just, I just want this stifling room that just silent and just oppressive.
I want to hear my own heartbeat. Yeah. I want to hear the blood rushing through my body.
So ultimately,
while I sit here in stagnant air.
We really related to.
Yeah. Pinned down under a blanket. No, well, there is one thing we differ on, Mike. And that is, I hear that you're probably the more popular opinion on this than me after seeing people pop off about it online, talking to other people. I like hospital corners. If I go to a hotel room and the blanket is tucked in, the sheets are tucked in, I'm like a little letter in an envelope. I just want to slide in and just be like, you know, pinned in there. But you really need the free feet. You untuck. You don't want a hospital corner. You don't want the tucking.
You don't either.
I do. I don't like wrinkles. I want everything.
Yeah, but you don't
straight.
Want. But
I
you
want
don't
a
like.
Sheet
but you don't like being trapped.
Straight. Well, it depends on what part. I don't mind being.
You
trapped.
Would just sleep in a sleeping bag.
Well, that's a teeny tiny guy, huh? I wouldn't. If I'm in a king size bed, I'm fine. I can move all around. A queen size bed. Now, if I was in like a, laying on a couch and somebody pinned me in that, like, no, but like something larger where I can kind of kick my feet around. I really like to like dangle my feet off the end while the covers are still tucked in so that they go like down, you know, it's laying on your stomach and your feet go down and love it. So nicely, it just fits perfectly. Well, anyway, nobody likes that. I just enjoy the tucking process. Now, the thing, Total Recall, immediately. As a child, I just remember seeing it, and then especially the scene where he's getting the memory implanted and they ask him what type of woman he like what type of body, voluptuous, athletic, and he's like, athletic, and asking the traits, and he's like, demure, and I was like, I remember asking my mom, like, what is demure? And she's like trying to explain to me what demure is, and then I went and looked it up in the dictionary, and I was always like, and that's the thing I was like remember the most is when he like wants a woman who's demure and sleazy.
Sleazy and demure.
Sleazy. Demure.
Like, look.
I got
me one of those.
I know. It's like the goal was set for me. Immediately.
Love the red light district on Mars, of course. The last resort. Great place. Which, of course, has the... What most people, I think, when you hear the word Total Recall, I can't imagine that anything else pops into anyone's head other than
I had forgotten about it until they got there.
Tits. And, you know, Tara, we
said it. They're really nice three tits,
though. We said
it
watching it.
I'm glad they are nice. All three of them look good. They look squishy.
Yeah.
They look nice. Like, you could have had, like, shitty looking three tits, but those are nice, three nice
squishy
tits.
But, Tara, as we said, watching it last night, and hey, I love tits. Don't really want three.
Yeah, it's kind of a
it's
like
not,
and I do know people get kind of like sexually aroused by it because I've seen like ladies cosplay it and I just don't care about
yeah
it.
I mean I like it in context of the movie, but like I don't, that's not something I would like want.
Or yeah, it's just it's more like kind of like cow udders at that point, but the lady who plays it is cool. Like I
She's
think that
great.
Character is great. I enjoy her voice. I enjoy her hair. She is instantly likable. Like, I think the casting in Total Recall is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, it really is great. And again, just the whole, I love when they're on Mars. I love the whole, just again, the chase of it all. This constant chase and this constant, you don't know who to trust.
Yeah.
As the viewer, you're not sure, like, should he trust them? Should he trust her?
Should he
trust him?
Should he trust himself?
Should he trust himself? Yeah. Is he who he thinks he is?
How
is he not? It just keeps unfolding. And I found it to be, especially on this watch, and it had been such a long time, I found it to be like really, I loved the way it unfolded.
Stone Cold classic. It defies time. It's a fantastic film. And what a strange time for Schwarzenegger, too, because he's not his like massive self. It's like he's kind of like slimmed down a little, you know? He's more like slim trim Arnold, but peak Arnold.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've had Commando, you've had Predator, had Terminator. Terminator 2's coming next.
God. I'd watch that.
We'll definitely be doing a Terminator 1 and 2 episode.
That would be great.
At some point.
But, yeah, I mean, fantastic. And again, another thing that I always wanted from Total Recall, the receptionist who has the stylus and she's just changing the colors of her fingernails.
Right when that happened, I'm like, that's Tara's dream.
Oh, my God. I want that so much. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. Like you said, Sharon Stone's so great in this. Everyone's so great in this. Yeah, the Johnny Cabs are great. Yes, it is the
Waymo.
The Waymos, which we've still never taken.
And you know what? It's so funny that watching this kind of made me want to take a Waymo. Because I was like, huh, like if you're in a Waymo, you can just like lay down. You don't have to like, you can do whatever. You're in a Waymo.
But again, these movies do predict so much. Like you said, the flat screens, the trackers.
Oh my God. Look, of all the things, like whenever, you know, that little thing that he grabs the tracker out of his nose and pulls it out. Ugh, like as a kid, like how amazing would that be?
That
like how many
crazy.
Times did you stick? Like my brother and I definitely stuck something glowing up our nose and we'd be like, how
did not do that?
Oh my God, I did. 100%
but that
did
scene
that.
Is great.
I don't remember what we had. It was like something that was like, it was like a light on a stick or something and it was attached. And so we'd like a pencil flashlight and we'd stick it up our nose and be like, really important thing that we would do. It was great. But that scene, the mask where he's dressed up as the big lady when he's going through customs, like seeing the x-ray machines, like the full body x-rays, like that definitely have those, not in the same like giant screen, but the cool mask. That kind of opens up. Ugh, God, it's the whole thing's great. And I think Mars looked awesome. Like, in watching it again now, like, I'm so glad it's not CGI'd. The Martian landscape looks so cool. The way the camera pans over it. It's digital.
Most of it's, or a lot of it, models. I mean, I'm sure this obviously enhanced, but a lot of it is Nevada.
Oh, no shit. That
yeah, and,
cool.
and they, there's a lot of matte painting, which the guy was on RoboCop, I believe is the same guy. I can't remember if he's on Total Recall
as well. God, the machine that's going to turn the air on, like, it's so fucking
cool. It's so satisfying when the air comes on. All I can think about is it being so stifled, Tara.
I know, there's probably, well, they're not, they're freezing. But the faces, like, whenever their masks break, like, the bulging eyes and just everybody, like, clawing at their throats, like, and it's just like, and you think, like, will their face ever return to normal again after it gets all stretched out and weird? It's kind of like Large Marge.
Totally.
Looks like Large Marge on Pee-wee on that scene. But again, those are things that, like, you know, thinking about watching Total Recall again and just talking about the things that stand out. People think about the big, like, the three tits. And, like, but there's so many things that people think about. They think about taking the red thing out of their nose. They think about the insane Martian landscape, the eyes bulging out of their heads, like, all of the digital screens where he's talking to himself, like the suitcase with the screen and like all of it, like the whole thing just like crafts this world that sticks with you through time.
Absolutely.
Or it did.
Absolutely.
I fucking love it. And again, like when he shoots the rat, I just, before he did it, I could see that blood from the rat glooping down the screen before he shot the rat. And it's like, but that's the Verhoeven violence, right? Like, that's where it's, like, kind of, you know, like, blood clot and gore coming out of it that you just remember.
It's true. It's so memorable. And watching it again now, better than ever.
I just love
it.
Always loved it. Family favorite. I've seen it so many times. Watch it again right now. Love it so much.
RoboCop, better than ever.
Better than ever.
Total Recall, better than ever. Basic Instinct, better than ever.
My
Man.
God, it's the first time I understood it. Like, you know, there's some movies, though, that I think, like, even us watching them in our early 20s, we didn't get them in the same way. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
There's, like, this pocket of, like, films, like, that sometimes you just need to be a fucking adult to understand what any of that shit
is. I mean,
like.
I saw, you know, caught this on HBO, you know, in the summer kind of thing and remember being like, oh, I know I'm not supposed
to
watch this.
Yeah.
And yeah, I probably didn't follow it because it is, like you said, there's a lot of ambiguity with the movie and the murders in the movie, yeah. and the way it shows it doesn't tell.
Yes.
And there's certain things that leave it up to the viewer, but right away we get that Verhoeven violence.
Oh my God, the ice pick, it's so amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. Right away we get the brutal, brutal murder that sets off the whole story. And it is,
it's like, starts with cocaine and fucking, and then it ends with, you know, and then a lovely, was there a mirror on the ceiling in that?
Yes,
Yeah, the mirror on the ceiling, and then we get just like a gory, gloopy ice pick stabbing.
It's so, so great. And man, Basic Instinct, God. Michael Douglas, I mean, again, he's on the run. Fatal Attraction, yeah. Wall Street.
Yeah, shows how he got that throat cancer in this one.
Yeah,
huh?
Little. I always love that he's, if anyone doesn't know what that's a reference to, Michael Douglas said he got throat cancer from eating pussy.
Yeah, yeah. And then, and like, said it like with his like hot ass Catherine Zeta-Jones wife, and he's like cautioning people, and he said it like bitter. You know what I mean?
I'm going with that he said it proudly.
Yeah, no, he sounded bitter about it. He sounded like,
hey, you know what? My memory, the memory implant that I...
My memory implant says he looked he looked at Catherine Zeta-Jones as like, I got it from her snatch. You know what I mean? And she's like, oh, brother.
Hey, you know what? Worth it. but, you know, so we have this, just that classic story. Sharon Stone, suspected murderess. Michael Douglas, a cop who's had his own fair share of problems.
Detective.
Who has, you know, done coke, who has
had some substance abuse problems.
Killed some innocent people.
Smoking.
Accidentally.
Tourists.
You know, has his demons, and the story of him trying to figure out who is the murderer and continues to unfold. I love that Sharon Stone's an author who wrote a book that basically describes the murder, the first murder. Mm-hmm. And her whole thing is like, well, if I wrote the book, why would I do the murder? Because that doesn't make any sense. And, of course, you have the famous interrogation scene where she does uncross her legs and you see that beautiful.
But it kind of happens real fast. Like, it's kind of like, whoop.
But it's great.
Yeah.
It's great to see.
I love it. Yeah.
And she looks so hot in the whole movie.
Yeah. It's great.
And
I miss flat asses sometimes. Like, I'm not saying, like, I want flat asses. I'm just like... A normal, like, she has like a lovely figure, a lovely body, and we don't need to like have an unnatural ass on it. It's just great.
But like you said, Tara, there is this, you know, there's discovery of murders in the past. Her parents are dead,
but she is all wealthy. This stuff is
mysterious. And did she do it? Is it, as a viewer, you're like, is it too obvious that she's the killer?
Mm-hmm.
There's a point where Michael Douglas is over and she pulls out the ice pick and starts smashing ice for their drinks. And so it kind of has that giallo thing, right? Where sometimes the most obvious thing is it.
And there's several blonde ladies. So there's lots of lady killers. There's a few blonde ladies. So who's it actually going to be? Her lover? Is it her? Because they both have blonde, like the ambiguity and the blurring of reality in terms of like who's committing all of these crimes.
Yeah, and it's great. You know, she has her chick lover along with Michael Douglas, and is her lover? Did she do anything? Because her lover turns up murdered,
mm-hmm.
and everyone in Sharon Stone's life ends up dead. Now, is it because of her? Did she do it?
And
right?
Everyone
and again,
in her life has committed murder.
I'm asking these questions so that you, as someone listening, maybe it's been a long time, make sure to watch it.
What do you think? Who do you think committed the first murder?
Oh, her. You know, like, I think especially the last one, because it's set up in a way where it seems like it's basically this other woman who turns out did know her and was obsessed with her back in college. Yeah. And that's who they make you think did all the murders. I don't think so. I think maybe she tried to set up the first one to make it look like Sharon Stone. But definitely the final murder was definitely Sharon Stone. And I also think the murder of the girlfriend is Sharon. Yeah, no, I think it's mostly Sharon Stone.
Mm.
But they give you that ambiguity that it could be this other woman.
No, didn't the girlfriend die in the car crash chasing Michael Douglas?
But again, it's all unclear as to
was it set up?
All this kind of stuff.
Yeah, or who told her to do that?
That's what I mean. So there's a there's a lot of these questions that aren't. And again, it sort of gets away with it, where it kind of gives you all the possibilities where it ends. It could. It basically gives itself the out where anyone could say it's this and this and this.
But I really appreciate that. I think it still stands up because it doesn't try to over-explain anything. Like, I appreciate the sleaziness. It's not trying to... I like that it's not trying to define her relationship with that other woman. She's like, who is this man to you? She's like, oh, I fuck him. You know what I mean? She's not trying to say that anybody's her partner or her boyfriend. She's not trying to define her sexuality. She's like, if she feels like fucking somebody, she fucks them. Like she's not... Like, her lady friend is whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, she likes to watch. They both like being watched. Like, but I appreciate Verhoeven, the scriptwriter, like, the storytellers. Again, not trying to nail anything down.
It's going in it just, like, to be hot and to be sexy. It's not commenting about this.
It's not making a social commentary
it's
about
anything.
It's
just, like, hot. And this thing, the movie is fucking hot. I mean, the sex in it's hot.
But also, that's another thing. Like, that's why I was probably watching it on TV. Like, by the time they showed it on TV.
Could they show that movie
on HBO
TV?
Or whatever.
It wasn't cut.
HBO.
None of those were cut. Those are all uncut.
I'm trying to think of what channel.
I mean, it could be on like something like USA. I mean, maybe they showed it, but I don't know. I mean, I only ever saw it. Yeah, like I said, I saw it on whatever, HBO Cinemax, whatever it was, on cable.
Yeah, I saw it on cable somehow, but, you know, not with my family because they wouldn't have wanted me to watch that.
No, I think that would have also been, like, I was pretty allowed to watch anything, but I would assume, I remember watching Basic Instinct like I wasn't supposed to watch it. I don't remember if it was like, you can't watch this movie, but I remember watching it being like, ooh, I'm probably not supposed to watch this movie.
I was allowed to watch rated R if it was an action movie.
Yeah.
I was allowed to watch horror movies, like, of any type. I could not watch, like, rated R sexy movies. And I was not allowed to watch daytime talk shows for some reason. I could watch soap operas, but not daytime talk shows. And there was, like, a weird category, but... I think, like, for some reason, like, my family was, like, pro-violence, anti-sex.
I mean, that's...
But that's
typical,
everyone, yeah. Pro-violence, anti-sex.
But Basic Instinct, again, talking about how these are sort of the final, last, like, major, you know, B-movies made as major Hollywood movies. I mean, this totally has, like, an old giallo...
100%. This fits all the criteria.
Even the way, even how it's unclear as to, like, wait, did you know? There's so many giallo words like that. Like, wait, who did that murder?
And yeah,
who did that murder?
They couldn't have done that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where there's multiple killers and it's coming together. Oh,
and
so it
has that feel and just the look of it and the violence of it. It's over
the
top. The
glamour. Oh, that's what we were. We watched this because
you wanted something. You said you wanted something murderous and glamorous.
You had
mentioned a giallo.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, what about Basic Instinct? Yeah. And this is what kicked off our Verhoeven zone.
Yeah. Sometimes we start with just like what do we feel like watching? And then I'll be like, this is the mood I want. And then Mike will pick something out of the mood. But yeah, murderous and glamorous. And I think this is murderous and glamorous. Like, aesthetically, Basic Instinct is fantastic.
Everything about it's fantastic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The look of it, the you know, this is the San Francisco,
the outfits, the road, the home design, like the cars, like everything about it is so aesthetically.
I love
satisfying.
the ice blocks for and the crack ice picking for drinks.
Like,
makes me want to do that right now.
I like rough edges. Oh, we have a bunch of bourbon.
Whoa.
Oh, we have a bunch of bourbon. Hey. And we have a bunch of ice picks.
But yeah, these are just made as major A-list Hollywood movies, but with the mentality of an old B Italian movie, kind of confusing, sexy, violent, hot.
Love it.
Might offend people, especially Basic Instinct offended a lot of people. Good, because these people who are offended by things are
Basic Instinct.
It's always good. It's always good to brush them away. You're always good, like, oh, you're offended. Cool.
That's
go,
good, but if, you know,
go
what?
Away. Go
grows
away.
Character. Get go. Offended. Go. It grows character. It lets you know where your boundaries
but
are.
But to me, it also just like lets you. It's like, okay, cool. You can go over there now.
Yeah,
we're good. But even RoboCop, like the violence of it, people were outraged by it, or you know, or just the, you know, the themes of something like Basic Instinct, or the confusion of something like Total Recall. I mean, these movies were, again, seeing movies when you're too young. I mean, obviously anyone listening to this is not too young.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But maybe someone listening to this has kids who are gonna be too young soon, and it's like you don't necessarily have to
spoon feed people things. Yeah.
But it's like watching movies when you're a little too young, I think, is so important because it makes your brain start to try to go higher than it already is.
Don't get traumatized.
You know what? What's wrong with that? You were traumatized by Toxic Avenger.
I know.
When you were
I was going to say, like, yeah, I mean, I guess that is, like, that was kind of a thing that probably shaped, like, the guy at the video store told my mom to rent Toxic Avenger for the kids because it's a funny movie, which it is. Like, watching it now, it is. But when you're four and you don't understand what's real, like, some kids are afraid of, like, the Easter Bunny still. You know what I mean? So when the Toxic Avenger came on, my brother was having fun, but I got scared and I cried, and then my mom turned it off, so my brother got mad at me, but then I regretted it afterwards because I would think about it all the time, and my brother would be like, hey, because I cried when he put the guy in the washing machine, and my brother would be like, hey, remember when he put that guy in the washing machine? And I'm like, ah! but then, you know, after the initial shock wore off, I'd be like, oh, I want to watch that now, like, I kind of want to watch that. I'm like, I'm not scared anymore, but the damage had already been done. But then forever kind of chasing that, you know, insane movie like the Toxic Avenger, I think, was then kind of thoroughly implanted in me.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Because you know? Then after that, I was like, what else is out there? You know what
you know,
I mean?
I was trying to think, it's funny, just as you're saying this, I was trying to think of what my first, if I even had a first horror movie. I mean, obviously I did.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I mean, I just, for me, it's, I have the memory of Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I saw first. I actually do not remember this.
So, okay. Yeah. And so I saw Nightmare on Elm Street first because I always was afraid to go to sleep because I thought Freddy was going to like come into my dreams. And I have very vivid dreams and I was always convinced that, and it was weird. And I'd be like walking down to the basement or something and I'd be like, oh, I better go really fast because Freddy's going to get me. And then I'm like, stupid, Freddy only gets you in your dream. And but like, but sometimes Freddy can like, what if I'm falling asleep? The whole thing, like I was chicken shit. You know what I mean?
I'm remembering at least a glimpse of something I saw first now. And it was a babysitter and she was watching Friday 2. And the reason I know it was Friday 2 is because I remember the scene with Pamela Voorhees' head on with the candles.
Yes.
That I remember. Yep. And I remember being like, whoa.
What is
and I remember
that?
Being pretty freaked out by that and being like definitely having trouble sleeping and definitely being, but it was like, I think I wasn't in the, I was probably supposed to be asleep and I probably walked down and she had it on kind of thing. Cause she wouldn't have necessarily played it for me, but that would have been my first glimpse of a horror movie. And I remember being scared and then also being like, but what is that? I want to see that, you know, like, and I remember, you know, I remember seeing commercials for, it would have been Friday or Nightmare 2 because I remember the bus.
Yep.
From Nightmare 2 in the commercial.
Well, I remember the waterbed scene so much because my whole family had waterbeds. Like at one point we had no regular beds in the house, like for a long time, only waterbeds, exclusively a waterbed home. Very heavy, very wet. It was wild. I don't know why. We just liked waterbeds.
But for me, I think it was even more, so it was definitely one of the Halloween, Friday the 13th, or Nightmare would have been the first movies, the first like movies that I would have seen somehow. I don't have a memory of which one, but for me, it was always the books. So I would always read like John Belair's adult horror books, which then led me, my interest into seeking out the movies, which led to Clive Barker, which led to seeing Hellraiser and Candyman, et cetera.
But, yeah, I definitely saw Hellraiser a lot.
Yeah. Which is, again, too early. And me reading Clive Barker when I'm 11 or 12 is too early.
Yeah.
But that's great because it makes you, I think that's a great thing.
But it's also a thing like you're not forcing it, but for somebody to be curious and looking for things out of their comfort zone, I think is important in personal growth.
And then when getting into more of the, you know, well, for being a kid, 11, 12-year-old kid in 1991, 1992, you know, as underground as it gets for, you know, seeing something like Evil Dead or Texas Chainsaw. Yeah. You know, that's you see Evil those, Dead, yes. And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa. And you could tell even as a kid that, oh, these movies are different than Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. I could tell this is more... I didn't probably didn't have the word underground in my head, but I can tell this is more low budget or whatever. And then once you start discovering those, then the well opens up.
And then my brother's best friend was in a wheelchair. And so that, of course, we had to see Texas Chainsaw and Silver Bullet. Yeah. Like anything, we would,
great. Friday too.
It's great. And he liked horror movies. My brother didn't really, but so then I had somebody to watch horror movies.
Yeah, so look, again, all this is stemming from the idea of, like, these movies, Total
Recall.
Do you
think our street's named after that, Franklin, from Texas Chainsaw?
I 100% think so.
Yeah.
Seeing these movies like RoboCop, Total Recall, Basic Instinct when you were a little too young. And I guess these all just came out when we were getting to see these movies, when go to a sleepover and someone rented RoboCop and we're 8 years old watching it.
Yeah.
Or Total Recall, we're 10.
Someone has cable in their basement and have a sleepover in the basement.
So it's just like that kind of stuff is so important in development and in your life that will lead you to great things. But watching them now in 2025, boy, all three of these movies
are so good.
Better than ever. Paul Verhoeven, what an incredible director. I mean, I've never seen the movies before this. They look great. I'm really excited.
We're going to check them out now because I'm
really
love
excited
Paul Verhoeven.
But we will continue our Paul Verhoeven conversation next episode with Showgirls and Starship Troopers, the fourth and fifth of this insane 5-movie run from this insane director. A little late today. Obviously, this is coming out later in the day on Thursday. I'm not sure next week's episode. Also, maybe either a little later in the day or possibly a different day. I can't remember what our schedules are. Might also just be out when you wake up on Thursday.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see. I'll have to sort our schedules next week. But thank you for the support. And go watch these three movies and get ready for part two of our last exploitation look at Paul Verhoeven. All right, Tara, anything else before we go?
Oh, don't tempt me.